Good morning and welcome to a brand new episode of Radio Wild. It's the first Monday of the month, August 3rd, which means we have a very interesting program lined up for you today. We're going to be interviewing Wilson Wiwa of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and discussing his perspectives in what we're calling the Great Predator Debate. Great Predator Debate is an ongoing series that will be airing over the course of this summer and into fall, and is a direct byproduct of a film that we are producing by the same title, The Great Predator Debate, A Nation's Dilemma. In this film, we're going to be discussing many of the different stakeholders' perspectives regarding wilderness and wildlife conservation, especially when it relates to predators on the landscape. We will be releasing the film later this fall, so for those of you who are interested in staying up to date, please check us out online at wolfcenter.org, or you can follow us along on our Facebook page. On a different topic, and one that's just more sad, for those of you who follow us on our Facebook page, you probably have seen this already, but back in June, Muhut, one of our beloved wolves at the Waihee Pack, passed away. And she was getting up there in years for a wolf, and we had the best team of veterinarians and people working on her to try to save her life. But unfortunately, it was just her time. But we wanted to thank everyone who stepped up and wrote us words of encouragement, who supported us throughout. And it's never fun to lose an animal that's been in your care for many years. And we just wanted to say thank you for showing your support and for showing that you care for wolves and for the Wolf Education and Research Center and the work that we are doing to try to bring better understanding on the issue of wolves and wolf recovery across the West. And so we just want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts from everybody at Wolf Camp. Never be able to continue as an organization without your continued support. So for those of you who maybe feel inclined to help support us, you can go online to our website at www.wolfcenter.org, and you can look for that donate tab, and whatever you feel inclined to give, we would greatly appreciate it. A lot that goes into running and maintaining a facility in the wilderness of Idaho. And there's a lot of time and energy and effort put in day in and day out to make sure that the facility is operational for people to come, visit, and learn about why wolves are important to the ecosystem, to get up and close and personal with them. And, you know, month to month, it's always a battle to make sure that we can have the funds that we need to continue in operation. And when you have unexpected costs, like the loss of one of our animals that we care for, it always sets us back a little bit. You know, we do what we can to make sure we can take care of these animals the best that we can. So we give them the best treatment possible. So that adds up quickly. And for those of you who would like to support us, we would greatly appreciate it. All right, so moving on, we're going to take a quick second to recognize one of our sponsors for Radio Wild this month. And then we're going to get right into our interview with Wilson Wiwa of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. So stay tuned, and we'll see you on the other side. Today's episode of Radio Wild is brought to you in part by Soul River, Inc. Runs Wild. Soul River, Inc. Runs Wild uplifts and strengthens communities by connecting inner-city youth and veterans to the outdoors, harnessing incredible opportunities and powerful experiences that forges strong connections between youth and veterans, their communities, and the natural world. Spending time embraced in currents of river water, trekking majestic forested trails, and witnessing a bald eagle or elk in its habitat is healing. Connecting with nature is a powerful outlet to reduce stress, find focus, sharpen self-awareness, embrace spirituality, and develop positive values beneficial to both the individual and community. Soul River unites youth and veterans on challenging yet rewarding adventures at zero cost, where they become part of something bigger than themselves, developing into strong leaders in the outdoors and their communities. And we are back, and it's that time of the program now where we actually get to dive into some of the more interesting components. And I just wanted to say real quick, it's an honor and it's a privilege to have you here on the show, Wilson. And I was wondering if maybe you could provide a little background for our readers about a little bit who you are, and I think it'd be fascinating to learn a little bit more about you.
Well, my name is Wilson Wiwa. I'm a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And my descendancy is from the Northern Paiute people of the Great Basin, and also from my mother's side, the Palouse and Nez Perce people from the Plateau. On my mother's side, I am a descendant of Chief Wolf Nicholas of the Palouse people. And on the Paiute side, my descendancy comes from Chief Wiawiwa, one of the head chiefs of the Northern Paiute tribe.
Well, one of the first questions I'd like to ask here today, and especially for our listeners that are tuning in, I was wondering if you could provide a little bit of the history and the background of the tribe's history here in Oregon.
The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs have been in the Plateau and Great Basin area and other surrounding areas for probably over 20,000 years. And the legends that our people tell and the genealogies that many families hold attest to the fact that we've been here for a very long time. And that in some of the languages that our people speak, that we make references to animals that are no longer alive in Oregon or Washington or the Northwest for that fact. And so our people have been here for a very long time. There are even legends that refer to the time when the mountains were battling against one another. And many times the scientific community doesn't use that as a scientific fact that people were here. But when they look at the evidence of lava flows and the ash that has come from volcanoes, they can count back how many thousands of years some of these eruptions happened. And so if you use that kind of a fact, then our people were probably here for maybe hundreds of thousands of years, because we have legends that talk about when the mountains were at war. And legends can only come if there was somebody to witness that event. So our people have been here forever. I'm one of the very staunch believers that many of the Indian tribes that are in North America and South America were created here, and that there isn't enough evidence to say that all the tribes came over on the land bridge between Siberia and Alaska. In fact, I think that if there were migrations, that there was possibly migrations from tribes in North America that went across to Siberia. So I'm one that has always believed our people were created here.
Now I'm just fascinated to learn more about your stories and the legends, especially, you know, because, you know, your people have lived alongside wildlife and nature, you know, dealing with, you know, predators, you know, ranging from all the predators we have in the landscape today, but there are many animals that have gone extinct over the last, you know, several thousand years, and it'd be just, you know, interesting to hear, you know, some of those stories and what that means for the potential future today.
Well, a part of those are probably the more of the mammals, like camels and bison, woolly mammoths, those type of animals, saber-toothed tigers, because in our legend stories, we have stories that mention animals with those characteristics. And so it was until probably the late 1700s, maybe even into the mid 1800s, that buffalo were still in Southeast Oregon. And so some of those animals are no longer here, but our people made reference to them in the legends. And so when our people talk about the giant bears or the giant cougars that wandered the area, to me those are reference to those animals. And they weren't actually giant cougars or giant other mammals, but they were actually those animals from 100,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago, that were still here on this land. And so our people were probably hunting them. And there has most recently, I think they found evidence of spear points in some of the skeletal remains of some of those animals that are extinct now. So our people knew about them. They may not have seen them alive, but the stories that passed down make reference to them.
Now, you make mention of some predators, and how have Native Americans interacted with predators on the landscape for all these generations?
Among the Indian people, the tribes that I'm familiar with, tribes on the plateau and the Great Basin, because my ancestry goes to the Nez Perce and the Palouse people from my mother's side, and Northern Paiute from my dad's side. And the Northern Paiute were from the Great Basin. So I've had the opportunity to listen to many elders from both sides of my family discuss what I'm talking about today. And when you talk about predators, I think predator is a introduced term that has come along with expansion from the East, because our lives in the past were based on survival. And a part of that survival was to be in harmony with all the life around us. And so we didn't look at things as a dominant species over another species, but we work together with those other forms of life to coexist in the environment that we shared. And so our people knew about hunting from watching the other animals, like cougars, wolves, bobcats, the other animals that were out there that had to stalk their prey. And so many times through the thousands of years, our people adapted those same skills to a human form of how to track animals, how to hunt groups of animals, and how to use your family resource, your brothers, your uncles, your grandpas, friends of the family, to get the most out of hunting when the time came for survival. Our people never hunted for sport. That was something that came more recently. In fact, probably about 30 years ago or more, when we were elk hunting, we were on horseback going through an area near Mount Jefferson, and I noticed my dad looking up into the trees every so often, and I asked him what he was looking for, and he didn't answer me. And then one of my cousins seen a tree that had elk antlers in it. And that's the tree my dad was looking for. And there were 6 and 8 point elk antlers in that tree. And he said, these are the elk that we killed. And so as young people, we asked, so how come you guys never took the antlers back to the house? And my dad's answer to us was, my grandpa told us we don't eat the antlers. And it's better to take the spikes and the younger elk than to go after the old ones that have tough meat. And so that's the way we learned to hunt from our uncles and our dad, was not to go after the big game for trophies, but that it was still a matter of survival for putting food on the table. And so we use that today. A lot of families still have that teaching in their family to only hunt for survival and for the continued life that we revere.
No, it's great that you bring that up, especially considering the controversy today that surrounds trophy hunting. And in light of the recent events in Zimbabwe with Seize the Little Lion, I think it'd be awesome if people could just gain a little better insight into the way that you think and the way that you believe, especially when it comes to wildlife and the respect that you have for wildlife and nature and the way that you coexist with them. Perhaps you could share a little bit about some of those beliefs.
In our belief system, we were not the first ones put on this earth. The fish, the birds, all the other forms of life were here before man. And so they enjoyed what the Creator made for them. And the time came when the Creator decided that He was going to use His power to create, to make man. But all the gifts that He had were bestowed upon the animal world. And so when man was created, we were put here as helpless beings. And so we came to rely on the animals because they were created first from one Creator. We look at those animals and all of life as our brothers and sisters because we're all together on this one world like a family. And what impacts one of creation's children impacts the other children, just like death within a family impacts brothers, sisters, cousins, uncles, aunts, grandparents. So those impacts happen to us when something is impacted in nature.
No, you bring up a great point, and that's the balance between man and nature. And you know, if you look back over the last couple hundred years, we've had negative impacts and positive impacts on our environment. And you know, I was wondering if maybe you could share with us maybe how you feel, how we are doing with regards to that balance between nature and with man.
When the Creator made the world, it was a perfect world, and everything worked together in order for the world to exist. There are several examples I could give, but here on our reservation, there was one little creek where I grew up that had beavers on it. And some of the conservationists or biologists decided there were too many beavers on that creek, so they trapped them and then they moved them. And then not long after that, we had a lot of snowpack and water in the headwaters of that area. And when the melt came fast, it flooded that whole creek, and now we have cut banks on that creek that are probably 10 feet high. If the beavers were left in there doing their job, their dams would have probably stopped the water gushing down the canyon. It would have lessened the impact of siltation and the cut banks on that creek. So then the biologists decided that they needed to put chain link gabions, they call them, across the creek to mimic the dams of the beavers to stop the flooding. But it rained again, and the water went around the gabions and under the gabions, and to me, made the conservation effort worse. And so I've always advocated to bring back the beavers, let them do their job. Because it's shown in nature that if there gets to be too many beavers, there is usually, in the stories I heard from my dad and grandpas, that the coyotes will increase in that area and they'll take care of the beaver population and bring them back to where it needs to be. And with the lessening of the beaver food supply, then the coyotes leave to go look for another food source. So then it gives that resource time to regenerate itself and come back. And that's the way I think it is with the elk and the deer, with the salmon. They used to, long ago, tell us when we cleaned our fish, our trout, or if we caught salmon on the rivers on our reservation, and we used to clean them there by the river, take the guts out of them and then take them home to cook. And the old people used to tell us to throw them into the river. And some people that have come said that's unsanitary because you're allowing blood to be in the water supply and all kind of stuff, any other kind of pathogens. And so people then started bringing the salmons and stuff home whole and doing it at home. Well, now I think the fish biologists have found out that when the salmon used to migrate to the headwaters of wherever they spawned out and they died, and their carcasses rotted in the water and on the bank. But the carcasses fed the coyotes, wolves, bobcats, any of the meat-eating animals that lived in that area. The carcasses that rotted in the water fed the bugs, the little worms and the other bugs that lived in the water and in the rocks, which then those bugs, as they probably bloomed in population, fed the trout and the other salmon fingerlings and all of that kind of stuff. So now I heard that some of the hatcheries take the dead fish that they have milked and taken the eggs from them, they take them to the headwaters and throw them into the rivers now. That was a natural process that was happening already. But when the dams were put in, that disrupted that natural process. And so now we're doing it artificially. And so when you have a species that comes into an area, because there were wolves in Oregon, there were wolves in the Great Basin that lived. A lot of people think wolves only lived in the timber areas, but they didn't. They lived in the desert areas too. And I can't remember which article I was reading, but I think it was remembered that in some diary on the Oregon Trail that some of those people on the wagon trains actually seen packs of wolves come in on the Oregon Trail. And so they were out there on the flatlands and the prairies. But also in our northern Paiute stories, the wolf is the leader of all the animals. He's the chief. And whenever something happens among the animals in the legend, they all go to the wolf to solve the problem. And so he calls a meeting of all the other animals to come together. And so that's our northern Paiute legend. And our people come from the Great Basin, where there are very little forests like you see here where I'm sitting now. So he was revered by our people too in the south, as well as by the people on the plateau. Because there are people that were known as medicine men and Indian doctors that look to the wolf for his power to help the people. And so many times the animals, the grizzly bear, the coyote, the wolf, the elk, the swans, any kind of a life could bestow their powers on human people to benefit the human people. And so the wolf was one of those that were revered as a power to have to help our human people survive. And so we look at all those stories today. They're our guidance for the future.
I just love listening to what you have to say because I believe it's something that is extremely relevant for today. I mean, there's so much we have yet to learn about wildlife and about nature. And if we just take the time to sit back and observe it and to watch and to listen, there's just so much that we have to learn from just taking those moments to do that. Moving to our last little question here, basically, I just wanted to know if there's any advice that you might have for us or for our listeners who are maybe looking to gain that extra insight into how to coexist with wildlife and to just to understand that new perspective that you have. And I think it's something that's very valuable for us today.
We have to learn to live together on this world. And, you know, I look at the internet, and there are times that in the Midwest and even here in the West, I own land that is farmed. I rent it out and somebody else farms it for me. And then I get rent money and a share of the crops that are sold. And there have been times that I receive what is called a government subsidy because the federal government says we have too much food stockpiled, and so therefore they pay us not to farm our land. And so I look at it that way when it comes to nature, is if a cattleman has lots of cattle and maybe the market isn't the most favorable for them, and maybe they lose one or two cattle to what they term predators, then maybe the government should give them a subsidy too for their losses. Certainly we cannot all be so greedy that money is the only thing we see when it comes to deciding who lives and who dies, because every form of life has a right to be on this world, otherwise they wouldn't have been created. And so we have to look at that other aspect of the story too, than to just look at the monetary value of our livelihood. And it's going, and our lives will be impacted by it. I've heard other tribal people talk that we don't need wolves here because it'll start affecting our lands, but they've been here longer than us. And so I think they're an indicator of how healthy our environment is. I've recently read about the wolverines that are moving. They're migrating out of where their habitat used to be into areas that they were never seen at before. To me, that's a yellow flag that something's happening in their past environment that's causing them to move. And so I think in the Northwest, I've read that they're putting up sensor cameras and things like that because somebody has swore up and down that they've seen a wolverine in the mountains. And so they want to get pictures of it and they want to document why it's moving. And we had several years ago the wolf that came down from Idaho, and it came from Oregon. And we even had tribal members here talk about hearing a wolf up here in the Mount Jefferson Wilderness area. Whether it was the same wolf or not, somebody heard it. And then it went almost to California, or it did go to California. And so wolves usually aren't loners that go out on their own because they know how to hunt in packs and they have to be like a family. So that's another part of the story that kind of has me baffled, is why it has chose to be away from a pack for over a year and a half. I can't remember how long it was that they were by themselves, but it was quite a long time. So when we have those kind of changes, we need to ask ourselves why it's happening. And I know it's because of the global warming that everybody says we don't have. But things are changing, and it's affecting us Indian people like it's affecting those animals that are disappearing off the face of the earth. Because I have friends in Alaska that used to be able to hunt different species of seals and polar bears and even the caribou. They're changing their migration routes, and so that's affecting the people up in Alaska. And with those changes of habitat, you're finding animals like the polar bear in forested areas where they never were before. And you're finding, like I said, the wolverine moving. You're finding the grizzly bear out of its usual habitat. So everything is changing, and they're trying to adapt. You see the adaptation of human people, evidence of it all around the world, where they have flooded marshes in order to build towns. So we've had to adapt. We've carved cities out of deserts like Albuquerque and Phoenix because of adaptation. You have islands out in the Pacific that were pristine, and now they're tourist traps because people wanted to adapt. So when the animals adapt and they start to move, we have to be cognizant of why they're moving and not pick up the rifle to wipe them out because we don't understand why they're moving. They have a right to life like everything else.
Well, I think that's probably the best takeaway from today's talk with you, is just, you know, wildlife does have a right. And I believe it's our responsibility as mankind to ensure that they have that right and to make sure that the wildlife nature is going to be around for generations to come, so that, you know, our children and their children's children are able to enjoy nature as we have done today. Well, that pretty much wraps up the show. Wilson, thank you so much for taking a moment out of your day to talk with us here on the show. It's been awesome learning and understanding more about your views on wildlife and nature. It's just been an incredible experience, and looking forward to seeing your segment in the Great Predator Debate coming out this fall. You can follow us online at www.facebook.com/wolfcenter to stay up to date with our latest information, or on our line at our website at www.wolfcenter.org. Well, folks, be sure to tune in next month on the first Monday to hear another exciting episode of Radio Wild. I'm your host, Alan Lacey, and until next time, keep it wild.